Hi, and welcome to Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, where we take a deep dive look at all things reality TV, pop culture, and the world at large. I'm an intuitive and an empath, which means I pick up on the thoughts, feelings, and energy percolating in other people and the world around me. I believe there is meaning waiting to be found at every turn if you're willing to see it. So join me as we dismantle everything from trash TV to high spiritual concepts and learn more about ourselves, each other, and how we're all connected. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Jamie Stein. I'm sure like a lot of people, this is a bit of an unexpected episode. I know a lot of people, a lot of podcasters and content creators are churning out emergency content to deal with the breaking scandal, as it's now been termed, and I'm no exception. When news broke of this, it just felt like there was such a strong energy in it. And I definitely felt the impulse to dive into it and also received many messages from people wanting me to dive into it. And so I checked in with my trusty co-pilot Piper to see if she happened to have availability this week to jump on the pod with me. And as the fates would have it, she did have the availability. So here we are. We are going to dive into the deep, 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 deep waters of Scandoval and everything that that entails. I want to say up top, just a couple things, just to lay a little bit of groundwork. I've been consuming content in preparation for this. I've listened to Kristen Doty's episode about this. I've listened to Stassi Schroeder's episode about this. I listened to my own previous episode with Piper about Tom Sandoval. And I think on that note, I just want to name that one of the big things that came through in that episode was just this notion of Tom's complexity and how much, if we trust what was coming through, how much is going on inside of Tom and how many different threads there are. And I just say that because I feel that here in this situation. This just feels so like there's so many layers to this, both for the people involved, but then also for the collective response to it and whatever it's tapping into in the collective, which at this point for me is almost more interesting than the scandal itself. And so I just want to name that up top because I definitely feel a very familiar feeling that I was feeling in the last episode about Tom, which is like a little bit of overwhelm, just a little bit of, wow, there's a lot here. Where do we even go? How do we even start? Maybe I'll just officially bring you out, Piper, just to kind of create the space. So welcome back to the podcast, Piper Sample. How are you?
Hi, Jamie. I'm doing good. It's raining. I'm enjoying the quiet of the afternoon. It's funny that you say the deep, 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 deep waters of this when I kind of feel this is like a shallow pool in some way that's reflecting something super deep.
And when you say shallow, are you talking in terms of the nature of the show and the culture around it?
It's a good question. It really struck me when you said deep, deep, deep waters. And I was like, I mean, I understand I think what you mean by that, but when I watch this show, I think I'm talking about the show itself in some way and the reflection of these sort of what I might say gets reflected as some shallowness when there is so much more at play.
Yeah, I mean, I ask because to me, the show feels here, like the show itself feels here and the mm-hmm. role the show plays in these people's lives and the way they perform yes. on this show and the way the show becomes their life and I guess what they're willing to do for the sake of the show. So yes, that's why I asked. And even just saying that, I'm like, that's why I'm saying there's so much mm-hmm. here. You know, there's the personal of what's going on with these individuals. There's the show itself. And yeah, then there's everything that's organizing around the show. And then there's the other cast members in the show, which that's another thing that I'm very, very drawn to. It's how they're organizing around this. So this is getting ahead of ourselves, but there's a lot here. But what I do think is interesting is so the week before this news broke, I actually texted you specifically about Tom. And it's funny to think back now because part of what I was texting you, the impulse to text you was me taking Tom in the season. And I actually feeling like a very alive energy in him, which at that time, I interpreted that as, I feel so naive now, I interpreted it as being connected to his band. I was like, oh, Tom feels so alive to me. He feels like he's got all this energy going. I thought he was just kind of in his creative fire with his band and maybe it was like serving him well. Obviously, little did I know there was something else going on behind the scenes that perhaps I was picking up on.
Somebody else was serving him well.
Exactly. But I texted you kind of just about Tom and his energy and how alive he felt. And it was really interesting because you wrote back to me and I'm going to like read our exact texts.
Oh gosh, was it mean?
No, it wasn't mean.
Okay.
You just wrote, I don't know about him. There is some distrust I have. He seems so self-focused. And then you followed it up with, I just can't get past the narcissistic bend. And it's so interesting because when you wrote that, I don't know if this happens to you or to my listeners. Sometimes someone will say something that just lands with me where I just hear it. Like it just, I feel the truth of it in such a deep way. And when you wrote that, I suddenly knew she's really right about something. And I want to be clear, it's not that I never saw the narcissistic streak in Tom or, you know, didn't see tons of the flaws that like triggered people. Yes, obviously I saw all that, but I have always had a soft spot for Tom and there are aspects of him that I really liked. And what I got in that moment when you wrote that was, yes, there is something here that's a little unsettling. And what I got on the heels of that was I've been choosing not to see it all the way. And I actually wrote that to you. I wrote underneath that, I don't think I want to see it, LOL. And so it's just interesting. It's just interesting to me. It's interesting to me that, one, you and I kind of co-create the space with this podcast that ostensibly taps into the collective unconscious. It's interesting to me that the week before this happened, you kind of brought something in saying something specifically about a distrust you have, specifically around his narcissism. It's interesting to me that after all these years, when you said that, something in me suddenly was like, oh, she's right. And there's something I haven't wanted to see. And then like literally the next week, there's just this experience of Tom, I mean, at least part of Tom's secret world sort of blowing wide open. And if we think about this metaphor of like blinders coming off, like obviously something very deep and disturbing is being revealed. And I think it's especially interesting because a friend and colleague of mine who I've mentioned before on this podcast, an astrologer, Andy Bilotti, go follow him, Astrology with Andy, I believe is his handle on Instagram. He actually did a little astrological forecast around Tom, you know, around this time, and specifically spoke about it's in his chart that like there's this big turning point that's about like excavation of secrets. So I thought that was really interesting that there's actually kind of like a cosmic force at play here if we're, you know, to buy into, you know, the astrological trajectory. And what I also think is interesting on that note is that it's not been lost on me that Raquel is 27 years old, which is her Saturn return year, which I'm sure a lot of my listeners are familiar with that year. But, you know, for anyone who's not, our lives tend to move in cycles of 9, and 27 is the Saturn return year. It tends to be a very, it's like a turning point year, like in the development of our journeys as and our soul journeys as our journeys as human beings. A lot of people will die at 27. So like James Dean, Marilyn Monroe, Kurt Cobain. If you're someone who maybe has like a tenuous lease on life, a lot of times you'll go out at 27. I know from working with clients, 27 is often the year where people will make sort of big make or break decisions that kind of changes the trajectory of their life. So maybe they marry the person they weren't supposed to marry, or they develop the business that like kicks off really successfully. But it tends to be this kind of inflection point year that really establishes the themes that you're going to be navigating and sets the course for whatever your trajectory is going to be on. So I just think it's interesting that Raquel is in her Saturn return year, just broke off this engagement. From her kind of own description, pageants are ending. You know, she talked about that early in the season, feeling adrift, feeling lost. And then, you know, obviously she gets involved in this very kind of salacious thing that we'll explore. And now it's sort of cracking wide open. So this is all just to say, it's just interesting that sort of it's in Tom's chart. Raquel's in her Saturn return. And then again, like the week before this is all breaking open, you and I are kind of like in some sort of energetic naming of something that's unsettling around Tom. So to me, it just suggests it's all here. To use Shayna's language, it's all happening. And I think as we were saying up top, when we were deciding to do this episode, I really thought the main point of it was just going to be kind of exploring what is this about for Tom? What is this about for Raquel? And yes, obviously we'll explore that. But in the week that's ensued, there's just been such, it's just hit such a collective nerve. And like I said, I'm just seeing this kind of, definitely this fury in the fan base that feels sort of very alive to me. But then it's oscillating beyond the fan base. I mean, the New York Times has reported on it. There's articles being written about it. Ann Bradney, who has been on this podcast with us before, who knows nothing about reality TV, even she knows about this. Like, people are hearing about this. And it's funny because when it first cracked, I had this feeling like I feel like there's an energy in this. It feels like something's breaking open in the collective. But I felt self-conscious feeling that way because I was thinking to myself, it's not like this is COVID. Like, this isn't the war in Ukraine. Like, this isn't some important global thing. It's a trashy reality show on Bravo. And so I kind of second-guessed myself. But as it's been unfolding, and as it does seem to be really kind of finding its representation in all these different sort of corners, at least in this country, all these different corners that you don't usually hear and see people talking about Vanderpump Rules, I do just have this feeling like this is some sort of catalyst for something. And, you know, I think my intention for today is just maybe to slow it down a bit and really see if we can feel into, yes, what is this about for Tom? What is this about for Raquel? Maybe what this is about for Ariana? What is this about for the show itself? But then, yeah, that broader question of like, what is it that this is tapping into? And if we trust this notion of all of us as human beings being in some shared collective dream together, and that everything that kind of happens in the public domain is on some level a manifestation of the collective consciousness. Yeah, what is this reflecting in the collective consciousness? And why is it hitting such a nerve? And why is it taking people to such a deep place of what I'm experiencing as like just a level of rage that for me is a little uncomfortable actually to sort of witness and take in and to watch. So yeah, that's just kind of my laying the groundwork before we jump in. My impulse is to kind of start more specific and start with the nucleus of the controversy, which is Tom and Raquel. But I'm just curious, before we dive in, is there anything you wanted to say just in response to what I've said?
No, I know that we need to kind of start with what happened. And I notice I'm less interested in that than I am what you said about what this is reflecting and generating. I'm unclear about this outrage that seems to be happening and this canceling of businesses. And like, I'm kind of interested in all of that piece. So let's start with the, maybe the easier piece of, all right, so what happened here? How did this begin? What motivated this relationship?
Yeah, I just have this impulse. It's like, we got to go to the nucleus first and then let it kind of spiral outward. And obviously it's, in some ways it's a difficult conversation to have because this happened in secret and there's a lot we don't know. And obviously the point of this podcast isn't like me trying to be some, you know, psychic magician piecing together answers I don't have access to. So all I can really do is let myself drift to where I'm drawn, which is what I'm going to do now. And I think, you know, obviously anyone listening to this, I think you all know sort of what's going on, but just to briefly summarize, it has come out that Tom Sandoval has been having at least a 7 months long affair with Raquel behind Ariana's back. And apparently this whole storyline of Raquel sort of kind of pursuing something with Schwartz was just sort of one big decoy to mask and masquerade what was really going on with Sandoval. And this all came out last week. And I think what I'm most immediately drawn to in all of this, I mean, because look, the truth of the matter is, Tom cheating, I mean, that's not the biggest plot twist in my mind. I mean, for me personally, I guess mileage varies. Back in the day when Kristen was flying out Miami Girl and confronting him with this evidence of his cheating, yeah, it absolutely seemed clear to me that he had cheated with this woman. It seemed clear to me that these guys would go to Vegas and, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. again, the part of me that always wanted to give Tom the benefit of the doubt and wanted to kind of sort of veer more towards in the direction of the things I liked about him, I kind of made up a story in my mind that perhaps after the whole Miami girl fiasco, he'd learned his lesson and maybe had kind of amended his ways and wasn't cheating anymore, just because we'd never really heard anything like that again. Who knows? We don't know, you know, to what extent he's been cheating. But I think the thing that really stands out about this, there's so much that stands out about this specific situation, but what stands out about it to me isn't even so much the cheating, isn't even so much the affair, you know, with this close friend, although that's certainly part of it. But I think for me, what really stands out about it is the way that they were kind of flaunting it in plain sight. So again, just some of the details that I'm sure most people are aware of. Apparently, they had matching lightning bolt necklaces that they would both wear as like an indicator to one another of their love. And so you can find photos now of both of them wearing these lightning bolts, which incidentally, I guess, is also the logo of Schwartz and Sandys. One of the more, to me, kind of like what I would call disturbing things is that Tom dressed up as Raquel for Halloween. So I don't know if you saw that aspect of it. So, you know, while they were in the throes of this secret affair, Tom dressed up as Raquel for Halloween. And like, there's all these photos of him now dressed up as Raquel. And obviously Ariana's there the whole time, unsuspecting of what's going on. So there's this quality of it that just feels certainly like they're flaunting something. Certainly, like to me, it just feels like sort of, even though people don't know their noses are getting rubbed in something, that's what it feels like to me. It's like sort of rubbing people's nose in something. It's like having this really sort of like twisted secret that they're really getting off on. And, you know, I have to say, it's like that, I feel a deep cruelty in it for sure. And that is sort of what I'm most immediately drawn to. It's like, again, it's one thing to cheat. It's one thing to be unhappy in your relationship. It's another thing to carry on a seven months long affair with a mutual good friend. You know what I mean? Someone who calls herself a good trusted friend of Ariana, and to be doing it in this way where you're like participating in this sort of secret practical joke against the world and Ariana herself. And I do want to say just up top before like we get into anything, as someone who has had a soft spot for Tom, and as someone who I want to say this, unlike a lot of people, I don't now throw out everything that I've ever liked about him. I'm not someone who's sitting here saying, you know, I'm literally watching people on social media call Tom and Raquel subhuman. I'm literally watching people do that sort of diagnosing of he's a narcissist, he's a sociopath. I'm watching people rewrite Vanderpump Rules history such that Tom is responsible for every single bad thing that ever happened. He's responsible for like the ozone layer. It just feels like that to me. And so I just want to be clear, that's not where I'm coming from at all. I think anyone who listens to the podcast knows this is a podcast that holds space, you know, for everyone's humanity. So having said that, because I'm going to be willing to hold space for Tom and Raquel's humanity, I do want to be very clear though up top. This quality of the secrecy and the way they sort of played this out. Oh, the other thing too, it's like apparently they would go on dates together in public, but in disguise. So it's like the necklaces, the disguises, dressing up as Raquel for Halloween. I do want to be very clear when I feel into that. It feels, I mean, honestly, the word that I keep hearing is like sick. It feels to me like twisted. It feels dark. It feels disturbing. It's like there's something just sick and twisted about it. And I want to be clear that I'm very clear about that energetic feeling in this. And I'm just saying that up top because I don't want there to be any confusion that as I do hold space for Tom and Raquel's humanity, that I'm in any way bypassing just sort of the darkness of this. Because I'm certainly not. And that is the first thing that draws me. It's like that quality of that cruelty. And I think on a bigger level, because there are aspects of Tom that I have felt over these last 10 years that are connected to his heart, that I have felt his love, I have felt his humanity. I don't question that at this point. I think those also live in him. I just get so curious about what clearly to me is like a much deeper split than I ever
really sensed or let myself take in that there's obviously some kind of very deep conflict in this guy between his heart and just a deep level of sick, twisted cruelty that my initial senses, I don't think he's even remotely conscious of it. I don't think. So maybe there's more I could say about that, but is there anything you would just want to say as I'm kind of introducing this?
Just, you know, how you were saying what it feels like to you, like there's cruelty involved. It's like the way I was sort of feeling it was that it's a game, you know, like it's a, there's a game that they are disconnected from the consequences of those that will be impacted by them playing it. So as I feel both of them, when you use the word split, for me, this is a little bit different. It feels more like a disconnect, like a deep, deep hurt that somehow they pulled back enough from anybody exterior. And it's like, I'm going to follow whatever it is that I want at all cost. Doesn't matter. Like, I'm not going to get caught. Like, I don't even, my feeling is that there's like, in this game, they have some sort of cloak of invisibility that they're exposed on. They're people that are on a television show and they're dressing up in a disguise. To me, it's like, that doesn't clock. It doesn't even make sense to me that they wouldn't think that people would go, doesn't that look like people that are dressed up in a disguise? And wait, isn't that so-and-so? Like, I just feel that like, oh, I'm so good at disguises. I'm so good at this game that I'm playing that I'm not going to even have to consider the idea that I'm going to get caught. And after I'd heard about this, I saw the last episode and I was kind of watching Raquel with Ariana, you know, they were in Vegas and like Raquel did not in any way indicate to me as I'm like looking for every look, you know, that she had, like that I feel any sort of way about the fact that I'm having an affair with this person's partner. I just could feel this disconnect that I was so curious about. Like, this is my question for you, Jamie. In this world of Tom, yeah, and even Raquel, if you feel them, do you have a sense that they felt like they were doing something wrong?
No. So, okay. Yeah, to answer your question, you know, I did some prep drop-ins for this episode. So, like I said, the thing that I just keep getting drawn to over and over is the Halloween costume. That's the thing I find most disturbing. And every time, like, I see a photo of Tom in the Raquel costume, again, I'm like, there's just something so sick here. And so I just kind of wanted to drop into that, Tom, towards the Halloween costume. And what came to me, you know, if we're to trust it, I mean, even now it's happening. It's like the second I sort of drop it, it's like the smile sort of came up on my face. Like I said, it was sort of like this deep, like punishing cruelty. And the words that I heard is like, I'll show you what I can do. And then, and like I said, like the flavor of punishment. And then the words I heard were like, you fuck with me, I'm gonna fuck with you. And as I started to kind of just let myself drift more into that, it was almost like, and again, I don't know the circumstances of their relationship. I mean, it seems clear, probably there was a lot that Tom and Ariana weren't bringing to the show in terms of their relationship. Like, that's what it feels like to me, like that there were more difficulties than perhaps they were letting on. Because when I felt into this voice in Tom that says, you fuck with me, I'm going to fuck with you, what it felt like was kind of like, yeah, now I'm hearing the words bait and switch. Like somehow, and by the way, I'm not saying he's right about this. I'm just saying this is possibly how he's experiencing the relationship. But it was something kind of like, you promised me one thing with this relationship, but gave me another. And I feel fucked with in some way. So you fucked with me, I'm going to fuck with you. And so to your question of like, at least for Tom's angle, Raquel's a different piece of the puzzle. Am I doing anything wrong? Like, no, I get this sense that he really feels like, again, on the unconscious level, something was done to me. You fucked with me. I get to fuck with you now. And I'm going to really, really enjoy it. That's speaking to the unconscious. For me, maybe what that looks like on the conscious level is, well, you didn't do this and you didn't do that. And what, you know, kind of, I don't know, it feels very Jax Taylor-y. Like, no one else is perfect, but I don't get the sense for Tom that he was connected to a deep sense of doing something wrong. It actually feels like it just felt really pleasurable, and that on some level he felt entitled to it because he felt wrong. And I guess the last thing I'll say about this, just to bring in kind of larger macro pattern, as we're always doing, we did explore in our last episode about him this possible relationship he has to feeling fucked with by women. So we talked about in relationship to his mother, like even Lisa Vanderpump, it's like, oh, I'm inviting you into this bar. I'm going to kind of like use the parts of you I like, but then I'm going to kind of emasculate you in other ways. So I've always felt in Tom this kind of relationship to what it means to be fucked with by the woman. And I just felt that here, like something with Ariana around, again, you promised me one thing, you delivered another. And as I say this, again, just going off intuition and the little I know about the inner workings of their relationship, I just wonder if this has something to do with she has talked about mental health issues. She has talked about feeling sexually shut down. I get this images of Tom, maybe there's an expectation or a need or a request in the relationship for him to be taking care of her in a certain way or accommodating her process and what she's going through. And I'm just aware, I know you didn't watch sort of early on, but like when he transitioned from Kristen to Ariana, it was very much presented as like, oh, this is the couple. Like now this is the right couple. This is who he's supposed to be with. And Ariana was like the right choice. And she was presented as kind of like the cool, sexy girl who has it all together. And they were like the couple of the year at that point. And so I don't know, again, just purely from an intuitive standpoint, like I get curious about the possibility for him and of him of like a certain expectation with the relationship, it not being met and being pissed as hell about it. And yeah, so circling back around your question, that feeding the punishing cruelty and feeling like, no, I'm owed this.
Yeah, I guess I just have always felt because Ariana had the little fling with, well, I don't know if it was a fling, an experience with Lala. I got the impression that maybe she was exploring her sexuality a bit, that somehow, is she bi?
I think she identifies as bisexual, yeah.
Yeah, so something around the identity relationally, I think was sort of at play during their relationship. At least that was the impression that I had. So I guess I always made a kind of a generalized assumption with the whole cast, really, that all these infidelities and sort of, you know, like seemingly huge betrayals were really just an enactment of the lack of internal clarity around boundaries relationally, like that somehow they're in the restaurant industry, they're in the entertainment world, and they're a certain age where a lot of this in our culture is sort of being explored. What is being a partner? What is being in relationship? And I guess I assumed that they were exploring that in a way that maybe they had agreements that they could have relationships or have sexual encounters with other people and that it was agreed upon in some loose way and that he used that in some way. You know, I really don't know the details, right? This is just my kind of sense or feeling that throughout their relationship, there was so much ambiguity about what they were to each other, how they were supporting each other, how they were championing each other's discovery about who they were, that there might have been some confusion going on. And what I feel is a deep betrayal is even in a polyamorous relationship or one that there is agreed that there's some sort of openness that usually your primary partner is the one that is considered when you're going to be doing these things. And there's like an agreement or an arrangement. So I'm curious if maybe there was some sort of arrangement that said, don't dip your toe in the pond that we're sort of, that this world that we have, you don't maybe have relationship with our friends like that. And that's the depth that people are sort of responding to. Or as you called it, the betrayal feels more relative to the fact that A, like you said, there was something secretive. It wasn't agreed upon, but that it was with a friend who they were hanging out with. And like, if I'm Ariana, I'm like, I feel so stupid that I didn't see this. where was I? Why did I not? What was I missing? How was I missing this? And so I think when I feel into how big this is for the culture at large, like, what are they responding to? There's affairs everywhere in this thing. Why weren't people responding to these things that happened earlier in this way?
Well, you're now bringing in the collective.
I can't help it. It's my only interest at this point.
All right. Well, let's bookmark it, because I just feel like, okay, I do really have this impulse. Like, we've got to at least give some time and attention to the, you know, the individual terrain, because I think it's going to inform whatever we get about the collective. But, you know, as you were speaking, I just suddenly felt, just for Tom and Raquel, like, it really does feel like this act of aggression towards Ariana, you know, that it's not just about how they're relating to one another. But I mean, obviously, I just spoke to that in some way. I mean, again, if I'm right, if I'm onto something, obviously, I just spoke to that in terms of Tom, like the sort of punishing her for what he might experience as the bait and switch. But I felt it from Raquel too.
Towards Ariana?
Yeah, just the thrill of like pulling one over on her in some way. Like, I've got a secret with Tom. You know, I did a video about this on Instagram, but I'm feeling it again now. Like, there's a way in which it makes her special. The fact that she's got this secret with the man of the house who's in this sort of long-term relationship, and that they've got something against the woman, you know, the other woman who's actually like the significant, you know, the woman of the house. It just feels like somehow it helps Raquel feel more special. And it's almost like a classic triangulation between parents and a kid. You know how that can happen, how like the father and the daughter will sort of team up against the mom or vice versa. And there's a collusion there that kind of creates a sense of intimacy, because it's sort of us against them. It sort of strengthens our bond to be against like the dummy in the corner. And as I say that, there's almost something for me here for Raquel, possibly, about specifically like the dumb woman who's not getting it, like the disempowered female. Like, Ariana's the disempowered female, not me. And just that collusion with Tom at her expense, and how it makes her a part of something, and it makes her special and gives her, yeah, some sort of inflated sense of power that I think otherwise she's not feeling or experiencing.
Well, what comes to mind is this last episode where they were in Vegas and with Garcelle's son, the whole Lala and Raquel exchange. Like, there was something so interesting to watch Raquel in that dynamic. Like, I could feel the competitive nature in her, the one that probably has been in whatever the beauty pageants, that the things that she's done, like that sort of dog eat dog. I don't know. I just see her behind the scenes of a pageant and trying to come across as the one that is the friend, but then like really enjoying if somebody's going down. Mm-hmm. So I can feel that edge of cruelty that you were sort of noting earlier on. I don't really know what that's about with Raquel, but there's definitely, I resonate with when you say her need to be special or seen in some way. It's just interesting the way that it's playing out. Yeah, I feel really curious about what it is she's actually playing out.
Like I said, I did do a video about her on Instagram, kind of dropping into her towards Tom, and sort of what came through there. Well, certainly, yeah, was the thrill of the secrecy. But, you know, there was this voice coming through about like, I get to be the naughty little girl with the big bad man. And I heard the words like daddy and like, and by the way, this is actually what I'm about to say actually literally happened. Apparently they were sleeping together in Sandoval's guest bedroom, like in their home, while Ariana was like asleep in the master bedroom. And it was interesting because I heard this voice in Raquel when I was dropping in her that's saying, yeah, like I want to lure, you know, the man of the house into my bedroom, and just the naughtiness of that. And so for me, obviously it definitely got me curious about, I mentioned the triangulation, you know what I mean, between parents earlier. And I don't know anything about Raquel. I don't know anything about her family of origin or anything like that. But if I were to trust that information, it just definitely felt like there were echoes of some sort of early experience of perhaps triangulation, where she's made special as this little girl with some sort of kind of energy. And it being used in some way, you know, perhaps by an older male figure in her life, like that there was some sort of collusion that was being acted out with an adult, which of course is not her fault. And by the way, I feel like something similar may have sort of happened for Tom as well. Let's just say, go with this, for example. Let's say she's like a little girl. She's like 4 or 5 or whatever age. And she's got her kind of energy that's sort of, you know, especially if we trust that obviously there's more to Raquel that meets the eye. She actually has a lot of powerful energy in her that she just tends to disown. I'm assuming as a kid, she wasn't disowning it quite yet. So if she's got this powerful energy running through her as a kid, and there's some sort of older male who, like, yeah, is getting off on that in some way and colluding with her in some way and perhaps triangulating against another woman. And it's like, there are mixed messages there, right? Because it's like, in some ways, she's getting validated and rewarded for her energy. She's being made special. Like I said, there's a collusion there. But then also, it's like, she's going to also feel the heat of that. Because it's like, whether that's coming from the woman who's getting excluded, you know what I mean? Like the mom figure who resents her, or else, kind of like I was saying with Tom, like the male or the father figure kind of using her to the extent he wants to use her. But then, like, once it kind of reaches a certain point, he's shutting it down because things have to stay within certain parameters, which she might experience as like a deep rejection of herself and feeling like there's something that she did wrong. So it's like, I just kind of can feel that possible inner conflict for Raquel of like a possible early experience of like, wait, I was rewarded for this energy. I was drawn into something. I got something out of it. It was pleasurable. It was powerful. But then I also got this message that I did something wrong. And there's something inherently wrong with my energy and what I did. So I've got this energy. It feels good. I know there's currency in it. I also know it's sort of forbidden. On some level, it feels shameful. And, you know, I would go a step further and say, if she did have some experience of that, of being invited into something and then unfairly shut down and made wrong for it, I can imagine some part of her is pissed about that. You know, some part of the inner child would want to say, wait a second, this isn't fair. You set me up. Obviously, she's not going to have space or room to have access to those feelings. So it's suddenly like, as Raquel, first of all, there's these mixed messages about my energy in the first place. And then it's also kind of like, there's no room or space for me to speak up or name what's happening. So it's like, I got to like just sort of shut this all down.
Yes. And all of a sudden, I think what I'm questioning or wondering is if this is a way for her to explore her agency or power. Like, I actually will succeed in getting you to do the thing you're not supposed to do. You know, like, I'm going to be in touch with my sexuality or whatever it is that I know is attractive to you. I'm going to actually play out a place where I haven't felt empowering or empowered or powerful enough to create something there, like something, like you said, maybe got shut down in some way. And then she felt shameful or bad. But now it's like, I'm going to use that. And I'm going to use that in a way that lures that something actually happens and transpires. And I'm not even paying attention to whether or not this is good or bad or right or wrong. I'm just feeling that I have enough power over someone that they will do something they're not supposed to be doing. And I can also feel the place where that's not even being considered. Like, this is what I'm still sort of confused about. Like, if they're in this, are they even, other than it being secret, there's power in a secret, but I don't get a sense that they think they're doing something wrong. Like, they're not thinking of Ariana. Like, I get this feeling that they're just completely cut off. And what I hear you saying is they're somehow unconsciously like punishing her for something.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the way that I experience it, it's not just they're not thinking about her. It, like I said, it feels like unconsciously kind of an act of aggression against her.
Right. And I guess that's the part that I don't feel so much. So I'm just sitting with the difference between like where there's a disconnect.
For you or for them?
For them, like a cutting off of something. And maybe it's me cutting off from that type of cruelty. you know, how you were saying, I don't want to see something about Tom. It's like, maybe that's a part of me that's like, that's really hard for me to consider that somebody would actively be punishing someone in that way. And I guess because I'm, what is it that Ariana did to Raquel?
Well, I don't think that Ariana, well, and again, just to be clear, I am speaking to the unconscious. So I don't think this is conscious cruelty. But yeah, I think that for Raquel, I don't think Ariana did anything to her. Like I said, I think it's about the specialness of being the chosen one. Let's just go with this idea that there was some sort of triangulation in Raquel's past. And let's go with the idea that that pitted her against the woman of the house, you know, whoever that is in that situation. And let's just go with the idea that, yeah, at some point, Raquel got a message that what she was doing was wrong, or she was resented or shut down by certainly, you know, maybe the man who sort of invited her into something, but also the woman who's sort of like sensing a vibe and resentful of Raquel, right? Like jealous of that relationship between Raquel and the man. I mean, just even before getting to the shutting down, just by virtue of the collusion, right? It sets up a competition between Raquel and the woman of the house. You know, it's like, I'm the special one. I get the man of the house in a certain kind of way that the woman of the house doesn't get. Again, this is where my power is. This is where my pleasure is. This is where I'm getting love. This is what makes me special. And again, she's a kid. Like, she doesn't really know what she's doing.
And I'm confused.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then if she gets made wrong by the woman of the house in some way, again, like we're talking about the unconscious. So it's like, if she picks up on a vibe that this woman resents her, or like the woman is unfair, you know, maybe the woman starts acting out unconsciously because she just senses there's competition here. And then layered on top of that, at some point, if the man also shuts her down, it's like she sort of just gets shut down, right? But coming back to your question, it's like there's an inherent competition and there is an inherent sense of my worth, my specialness, my pleasure kind of comes at the expense of this other woman. So I don't think Ariana did anything to her. And then I do, like I said before, I just kind of feel the possibility too of like in this place where Raquel has felt disempowered and has sort of sold herself out by portraying herself as a disempowered, what did Lala call her? Bambi-eyed bitch, the doe-eyed, insecure girl who can't even make a toast. You know, she's sort of playing this part. I can almost see her viewing Ariana in that role as the disempowered female and feeling the charge of getting one over on her, because it's almost like annihilating that place in her that's been the disempowered female. Like, see, I'm not the dumb little Bambi-eyed bitch. Like, you're the idiot. You're the loser. And I feel that resentment, again, unconscious of like the role I felt I have had to play. Mm-hmm. Because I learned early on, I can't own my power. I can't own my energy. I can't be in the truth of my feelings. I resent that. And so, yeah, like I can just feel sort of all these different threads and sort of like Ariana just becoming this sort of receptacle for that.
Exactly. Like it's not personal. It's against something bigger. And I think that's what I keep feeling is this, whenever I feel this type of disconnection, I can feel that it's not like a personal thing. It's something bigger, which you're speaking to.
I mean, I think it's both bigger and personal for Tom. I think for Raquel, it's not personal. Yeah, that's my feeling around it. And it's interesting because what I'll bring in for this around Ariana, like my sense of Ariana, you know, I know she's talked a lot about like battling with depression and mental health. And I've always felt Ariana is someone who also like has, to me, she feels like she's got really strong, vibrant energy and powerful emotions and feelings that want to move through her. And that for whatever reason, it's just something that she doesn't have full access to. And so it's interesting because I experience her as someone who has a lot more decisive, strong, clear, knowing, and powerful energy that she sort of allows herself to embody. And so in that way, I can almost see how, like to an outside energy like Raquel, she really does sort of embody a certain aspect, again, of the disempowered female. And then if you add in the fact that she's not even aware of like what's going on right underneath her nose, it's just like, again, I don't know to what extent her mental health sort of struggles have really been playing out, but I get this image, perhaps a metaphorical image of like Ariana's the laid out in bed, depressed, and sort of like passive in her struggles. And then it's like Raquel gets to slip into the guest bedroom and be the enticing, you know, fertile female who like sort of is everything for Tom that like in her mind, Ariana can't be.
And I'm feeling Ariana as you were speaking, I was just thinking about what that relationship with Tom over time being with someone who is so self-focused must have been like for someone like her. Like, I just have this feeling that he couldn't have been really that good for her, her state. I can't help but feel what someone like him from the place that she was in, like if he sort of tipped the scales around her sense of being lost to herself.
Well, it's so interesting too, because it's like, this is where I start, yeah, having questions and curiosity. Because I will say one of the things that I did turn a blind eye to that always haunted me that I thought was so telling. I don't know if you were watching the show at this point. It was maybe a little early on in their relationship, but there was a moment where I think it was around her birthday. And I think it had something to do, I want to say, with her father's death or maybe the anniversary of her father's death. But she made a clear request to him. I want you to be with me on this certain date because I'm struggling. And he said no because he wanted to go to Las Vegas with the boys and drive like cranes, like construction site cranes. Like they had some opportunity to drive cranes and he was so excited about that. And I remember taking that in and being like, wow, that's kind of dark. That your significant other is like making a really clear, vulnerable, emotional request, and you are just placing your kind of desire for fun ahead of that. Like I said, that's sort of one moment that's always haunted me that I did turn a bit of a blind eye to. And so there's like that aspect of it, like where there are these moments where I've seen Tom like be what I would call actively selfish, right? But then it's what's so interesting and confusing is that Tom also would talk about really wanting to marry Ariana, really wanting a family, and then even wanting to like, you know, wanting to open her up sexually when she was having like a lot of sexual shame. And I remember kind of buying what he was saying and sort of feeling like that was evidence of part of Tom's, you know, the love that he has to give. But what's also interesting is I also remember at one point Ariana saying, like, not on the show, but in press, saying, Tom says all that, like, publicly and on the show. But the truth is, like, I forget exactly what she said, but it's like he actually doesn't really fight for it in private. Something to the effect of, like, in private, that's, it, like, the story isn't so straightforward about what he wants. And I remember, kind of like with you, when I got that text and it landed, when she said that, I was like, there's something about this that feels really true. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm just saying this because I notice as you're bringing in what it's like to be with Tom and to be with someone who's so self-focused, I'm just sitting with like the confusion of Tom. And does he even know what he wants or what he wanted from this relationship in the first place? And I guess, again, bringing in the parts of him that I have felt over the years does have love to give and where that is in all of this. And just not understanding how he was orienting towards this relationship in general, big picture, or even relationship in general. Like, what's this guy want from relationship? I mean, I think the other interesting thing, just to bring this in, like when he and Kristen were imploding and it came out that she had cheated on him with Jax, what I find so interesting, because now, you know, Kristen Doty is talking about it, they were in a toxic relationship, they were cheating on each other, they shouldn't have been together. But the fact of the matter is, when that happened, Tom refused to believe it. He was in denial on the show. Like, everyone was like, no, this happened. He was like, no, it didn't. I believe Kristen. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. And then even after she finally admitted it, he stayed with her, like, through the end of the season. And so I'm kind of holding that part of him, too, that, like, obviously had some investment, even in that dysfunctional relationship where apparently they were cheating. It's not like he found this out about her, enraged against her, and like stormed off in a self-righteous huff. He wanted to put his head in the sand. He wanted to believe it wasn't true. And then even when she admitted it, he stood by her through the end of filming and the end of the season. And I'm just like, I don't know, I'm just holding all these different parts of him.
For me, what I'm hearing is a recognition that he's invested in appearances. He's invested in the way he is perceived. And so to have someone implying that he's not enough, you know, that she needs something outside of the relationship was probably really hard for him to acknowledge or accept. Why would somebody want something other than me, someone other than me? But also I'm curious about the, I'm the good guy, you know, he's always the good guy. He's invested in the narrative that he is generous, that he does things in relationship, does things for people, does things for his business. And this is the part of him that I don't trust, because for me, it always leads back to how I am appearing to be. And I don't know why it feels a little disingenuous.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you bring in what he does for people, you know, and his generosity, it's hard because I still feel there's still a voice in me that wants to say, but there is generosity there. Like, he does do nice things for people, like getting that autographed sword for Jax that Jax then like petulantly like returned to him in the middle of the night. Or even, I mean, it's weird to talk about now given where the relationship went, but I'm assuming that Tom and Raquel were not in an affair prior to her breakup from James. But I'm just thinking about how Tom helped James with the proposal, including spending thousands of dollars of his own money. And so there is this part of me that wants to say there is actual generosity in heart in him. And yet at the same time, I also feel how on some level, I mean, certainly there's a demand attached to it. He wants to be, like you're saying, he wants to be seen a certain way. He wants to be recognized for something. And so I do, like, yes. Is it self-serving in a lot of ways? Yes, absolutely. And maybe is that another thing that I was underestimating, the degree to which his generosity can be self-serving? Yes, absolutely. Do I still feel some of his heart in it? Yes. I mean, to be honest, the more that I'm holding him in light of all this news, he's starting to feel much more and more like Lisa Vanderpump. Kind of the sense of like, I'm going to love you. And by the way, I have actual love in my heart. I have love to give. It's charming. It's deep. Like, it'll kind of seduce you into something, but you're going to pay a fucking price for it. And I guess maybe that's sort of what I'm feeling here is like that this is a guy, like I said, who I think does have love in him, but maybe it's just really deeply attached. Yeah, to the price you have to fucking pay, the way that you see him. Like, it's not, because this is the last thing I'll say. I feel like I'm kind of like all over the place. Hopefully this is, I don't know. Hopefully this is all coming together for people. But I did sort of just drop into him towards Ariana, like a big picture. Because obviously, look, they've been in a 10-year relationship. So obviously, like, things are going to change over time. But I just sort of let myself drop into like Ariana as kind of placeholder for big picture relationship in general. What was interesting was kind of like, I can feel the possibility here to actually be met. I can feel the possibility here to actually be like in a real strong relationship. Yeah, where I'm met by an equal partner. And the feeling of, I don't trust this. Like, I don't trust this. I don't trust there's not going to be a trick that's played on me. I don't trust that, yeah, this isn't a setup of some kind. And I felt for him in this particular relationship, like this was an inflection point. Like, you could have gone one of two ways. You could have gone the way of challenging yourself and like doing the work and using this relationship to really work through some stuff. Or you could go in the other direction, which it feels like he ultimately went in the other direction. So I guess this is just to say I experience his lack of trust in maybe what I would call like a surrendered expression of love that in some way is not controlled or controlling.
I'm curious at that inflection point and choosing the path that he did choose. What was it, if you could feel into this, like that kept him from saying to Ariana, I don't think this is going to work out long term. Like, we have wildly different ideas about how to be in relationship long term. And I think I need something different.
Well, I dropped into this too. I think there's a part of him, kind of like how he explored with Meredith Marks and Salt Lake City. I think it wouldn't allow him to nurture this rage. I think there's something in him, like again, in the place where this feels historical, like some sort of relationship to the woman who fucked with him, bait and switched him, his experience of feeling used by a woman in some way. I think there's part of him that is so deeply enraged by this, and it's a rage on an unconscious level, he wants to nurture. I just feel like there's a lot of pleasure there for him. There's a lot of power there for him. I think there's something there. He wants to be seen. And so, yeah, it's like if I'm Tom, let me just, I'm going to drop into it again, like just right now. Like this notion of, and you're not even talking about like coming clean about the affair. You're talking about just coming clean about like disappointments or
before an affair.
Like, honestly, yeah, what comes to me is in this place where I have whatever issues I have with our relationship, like I said before, what comes to me again and again is I feel betrayed. I feel fucked with. I'm pissed about it. I want to play something out right now. Like, I want to punish you for this. I really feel that. Like, I want to punish you for this. And it's sort of like if I just come clean with what is bothering me and sort of give you agency and choice to either like meet me here or not meet me here, or like maybe the relationship will end. It's like, yeah, it's like something goes unseen. It's almost like for him, it's like, let's just say he brings it. And then let's say the relationship dissolves as a result. He, in his mind, I think possibly feels used on the other side. Mm. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh yeah, you bait and switched me. You fucked with me. You used me. And now I'm kicked to the curb. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a power struggle.
I was going to say it places them in a position of powerlessness there.
Yeah. Oh God. Something I just felt really sad. Really sad.
About?
I don't know. I mean, maybe this is the unexpressed. When you brought in the powerlessness, Tom's powerlessness, I guess it's, you know, I have to imagine this is maybe the unexpressed heartbreak, the unexpressed, you know, whatever vulnerability he would have felt in that. Like, again, if there's some early experience of feeling fucked with or betrayed by the woman or the women in his life, just whatever that deeper level of grief and heartbreak and powerlessness would be that he doesn't want to feel. And I'm also, I don't know. Okay, I'm just going to go with what's here. Because, you know, as Jamie, I'm having an experience where, again, I'm just sort of taking in this part of me. It's like maybe I really, really did just underestimate how deep this, whatever you want to call it, just these problematic aspects of him were. And maybe I was really overemphasizing the good I felt in him. And there's something about that in this moment is disturbing for me. You know, it's like, did I fall for something here through the TV screen? I think the only other thing, like I do feel this impulse just to circle around to Raquel one more time. And because I remember, I think back in the day, like last season or something, I was going to maybe make a video about Raquel towards James or something. So I did drop into her towards James. And it was really interesting because I specifically remember, you know, it's too bad I don't create this content when I get the impulse, because then it would be on record. But I specifically remember for her feeling like, well, one, that she was actually scared of James and his wild energy, because he would actually be quite abusive towards her. You know, if we, let's not forget last season, like him talking about how her botched nose job affected him and he's the one who has to look. I mean, he was pretty vicious towards her. But what I got off her was, oh, it's safer for me to be with this guy who demands all the attention, who's so strong and overpowering in his energy, because it gives me a built-in excuse to disown my own energy. I really felt that, like, the relationship works for her because she doesn't have to take responsibility for or embody her own powerful energy. And it's easier for her to, like, defer to James's powerful energy than to own her own powerful energy. You know, I remember what they shared at the reunion, that they weren't even having sex. It was kind of like almost like they were just like really good friends. So it's like when I think about her relationship with James, it's just interesting to me that it felt like that was still very much in a track where vital parts of herself and her energy were getting shut down. And then it's like she leaves him, the space opens up. And then, like I mentioned, I mean, you know, that moment with Peter where she was saying, like, pageants are over. Essentially, I'm out of my relationship. I have no one to take care of me. I feel lost in life. And, you know, she cried. And you know, I rewatched that scene. I was like, I still believe this. I believe this is true for her. And it's almost like for me, just this experience of like, yeah, she's 27 years old. She's on the show. She doesn't have a pageants anymore. She doesn't have this boyfriend who she met when she was 22, who kind of like not only paid for things financially, but also gave her kind of a built-in excuse to disown her own energy. And I just keep having this feeling of like suddenly space opens up. And then like in swoops Sandoval. And I can kind of just feel this opening for this disowned energy that maybe she often doesn't let herself know or feel or touch. Like that part of her that may have gotten shut down at a young age that says, yeah, like, I want to be a bad little girl who has like a sort of deep, powerful sexual relationship with the man of the house. And just how it almost feels like she was just in the exact right moment for something to come up from the underground and to sort of live in this affair.
Yeah, it's so interesting. As you're talking about her, I totally feel like I keep checking out, which is, I don't know why I'm just noting it. Like, I can almost feel that disconnect, you know?
Well, yeah, to sort of go back to what you were saying earlier about like the scenes with Ariana, like what's crazy is that, I mean, let's just start bringing this to the show, right? It's like, first of all, she's acting out this performance with Schwartz, knowing that she's got this actual affair with Sandoval. She knows at this point, like per the last episode we just watched, this is having an impact on Katie. She knows it's not even real. She keeps going forward with it. And then having conversations with Ariana, I think this was last episode too, where she's like, oh, you know, I wasn't really thinking about Katie, but then when I saw how it impacted her, I felt really bad. And I'm just sort of sitting here like, wait, what? What is going on here? Like, you know, to kind of what you're bringing in, is she just completely disconnected from herself right now? Is this the part of her that actually does feel bad about something? Is this all part of the secret charge of the secret that she and Tom have? Like, what the F is going on here?
First of all, I didn't sense when she was telling Ariana that she actually felt bad, first of all. That was one of the things that I noted. I was like, I don't actually feel this is genuine. I know this is what I'm supposed to be saying. Back to the game of something. Like, I'm in a game right now. And my game is to, in some way, sort of shield what's happening. But I can't even, like, I can't feel her and I can't feel her relationship even to like this person that she is actively having an affair with her partner, like, and can look her in the eye and talk about another friend, this thing that she was doing, that she's actually doing, like with the person she's talking to. So it was like, that was a super confusing moment. And it felt to me like this, like when you start talking about Raquel, I get this feeling like and I felt that way even when she was with James. Like, I'm like, where are you? Where are you? I don't feel her.
Well, I think in some way, maybe we are kind of like dovetailing into what this is triggering in the collective. And look, obviously, it's going to mean different things for different people. There's not like one thing it represents in the collective. But I have to say, because when I hear you talk about like looking her in the eye and knowing that she's having sex with Sandoval, and we're talking about the game and we're talking about the pleasure of like the power and the secrecy, what I feel is the thrill and the charge of, yes, doing something. It's like, I want to say it was certainly selfish, but I don't even know if that's like the right word, because I don't know that she's experiencing it as selfish, but it's like, I'm giving over into something without any regard for anyone else. I'm like letting myself give into it. And that's part, again, of the pleasure and the power here. Like, I'm indulging something here that's just so deep and dark. And I get, it's like, I don't even know what the language is, right? And I feel for both of them. Like, that is a part of the charge. It's like some place in them, like I was saying before, that feels like it was like unseen, treated unfairly. And it's like, this is where I get to have it all the fucking way. And I don't care. But the reason why I'm saying this is, so for example, after I recorded that video, sort of possibly channeling Raquel and her love of like the naughtiness and the secrecy and the thrill of the power and all that, you know, it may or may not surprise you to know, like, I got a fair number of messages from people being like, you know what, I had a version of this. Like, I did something like this when I was younger. I had an affair. I know about the thrill, the secrecy, you know. And so I kind of wonder, especially because it's such a stark, extreme example of this kind of thing. Like, what I want to language is like giving over to that reckless abandon with absolutely no thought for how it's going to impact anyone else. Like, just breaking those fucking rules and taking the thing I fucking want to take. I wonder if that's part of what's getting hit in people, like the part of me that could make a selfish choice, the part of me that could not care how it impacts other people, and like not wanting to see that, to feel that, to know that part of ourselves as human beings. Even as I say this, there's something about Raquel, especially because the disconnect feels so severe. Mm-hmm. And these circumstances feel so, like there's no nuance to this. There's no, do you know what I mean? Like there's no, mm-hmm. well, Ariana's like a monster. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing you can say to dress this up.
Right. And I think as you're talking about this, it's like, I'm curious for her if she even feels the pleasure of being with Tom. I can almost feel like I'm even using like Tom could be anybody. It's not Tom. Like I can almost feel the place where I wonder if this disconnect has something to do with actually not even, when you talk about the charge or the, you know, the feeling of secrecy, the naughtiness, like all that kind of stuff, it's like, I can feel the flavor of it, but I don't feel it in connection with Tom for some reason. It's almost like that could be anybody. It's like the question, or like, so let me ask you this. Do you think there's actually something between the two of them?
I mean, they claim there is. I mean, my feeling from the beginning is like, no, this is completely about the secrecy.
Like playing out something.
Yeah, it's the game. It's the game for sure. I think that Tom, I think they made each other feel special. I think she felt special because, again, she was luring the man of the house away from the master bedroom into the little girl's bed. Yeah, she gets to be the special little girl with daddy. And I think that for him, because I did drop into him specifically towards her, he gets to be the man. He has the, you know, Tom, it's all about him. It's like, I, you know, I have the answers.
Oh, and she plays that up, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's like she thrills to him as the big bad man. Tom wants to be the big bad man, you know? And I just think that they were making each other feel incredibly special. And I think that they were allowing each other to act out an underground punishing rage that they otherwise mask. And I think it was very hot and erotic to them. And I think they're both deeply sexual, deeply sexual.
And now I'm feeling the show as like a whole other entity here.
Well, because that's, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, I even want to talk about like Katie, for example, right? Like, because Katie, it was interesting. I offered myself as tribute and I actually listened to Stassi Schroeder's podcast about this. And I want to say she still annoys me and I don't, whatever. She's obviously very...
Who's Stassi or Katie?
Stassi. But I will say she actually, what surprised me and impressed me was she actually does have a lot of perspective about how toxic the show is. And she specifically referenced like the impact it's had on her mental health. And, you know, so that actually was kind of interesting and refreshing to hear. But what she said that was interesting to me was that Katie had communicated with her like real time as the season was filming. And it told her about this like flirtation between Schwartz and Raquel. And she specifically said, what hurts me so much about this is I know that it's not real. I know they're doing this for a storyline. And the fact that they're willing to hurt me just for the sake of a storyline. Now, what I find so interesting about that is that Katie, even with the awareness that they're doing something for the sake of the show, plays along with it on the show. You know what I mean? It's not like, because I could kind of see myself if I were in that situation and I knew something was playing out for a show. My impulse might just be to like not even give it life. You know what I mean? Just to shut it down. Like, this is dumb. This is stupid. Like, I know what you're doing. We have scenes of Katie acting as if she believes it's real. Now, and this is what's so weird about this season is like, this season does feel like such a living totem to this blend of fact and fiction, because it's like Schwartz and Raquel are playing something out for the show, right? That's masking something real for both of them, by the way, because apparently that girl, Joe, who Schwartz has living with him that he claims is platonic, he is actually now like going out with her. And there are rumblings that they were actually an item all along. I don't know. So whatever. Both of them have their secret worlds. They're acting out this relationship for the show. And then meanwhile, Katie is responding to it on the show as if it's real, but she knows it's not real, but her feelings of hurt are real. And so I'm just sort of looking at this like, what are we in right now? Like, what is this? what are we watching? Like, what is this show? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is this show and what is this investment for them to create a show and the cost that this show is taking on their lives? Like, I kind of wonder, even in terms of Tom and Ariana's relationship, was there an investment in the relationship from either one or both of them because of the show?
It's so, I feel so trapped. If I were to imagine why someone at this age would think it's a good idea to, I want to be famous. I'm living and working in LA. I'm doing the thing that most people in the restaurant business there are, this is supposed to be taking me somewhere. So here's this vehicle, this show that is saying it's a reality show, but it's clearly being, the narrative is being created. And in order for me to get more time on the show, I have to sort of be invested in creating some sort of narrative. So I have to decide who I am as a character. I have to figure out what my relationships are with each of the cast members. And then I get trapped in this, like, is this real? Is this not real? Like, I can feel the places where I might have real feelings that happen, but then I'm lost in the narrative that's being both projected out there, responded to by, you know, like now we're talking about all the social media and they're creating a narrative outside of what the producers are doing also, right? Like, is that true? Mm-hmm. Like, because I know you follow this more. So I don't know how close the narrative that they post on social media is to actually what's happening, or if they reveal some sort of discrepancies between the way things are being projected. But it just feels to me as a whole, first of all, I'm watching this. And in this particular situation, I'm really questioning, like you said, what am I watching? What is this really? Where is this taking me? It's taking me to a place of disconnect. I'm so not interested, but I am interested all of a sudden in everybody else's interest in this super common situation where people are cheating on people. You know, it happens all the time, but like now there's some, because there are people that are in a position where they're being watched, that I have to have some stake in whether or not I'm decide whose camp I'm in. Mm-hmm. Am I team Ariana? Am I team Tom? Am I team Raquel? Like, it's almost like watching, it feels so gross. It feels like the Coliseum. It feels like I'm watching something that is so disgusting, and not disgusting because it's just human behavior, but because it's human behavior that's being put in an arena that is being impacted by the viewers, by the people that are watching. Like, bring in the lions, you know, bring in something else, tear them apart, you know, like destroy them, because somehow there's more investment in it or something. And I don't know. I feel a little nauseous even as I'm talking about it.
Well, it's interesting too, because it's like you think about Shayna in all of this, for example. And
yes,
you know, she was really, as you know, she was like sort of pushing this Tom and Raquel thing. And I think, was it Katie who leaked text messages between her and Shayna to like prove some point? I think Katie was trying to prove that she had expressed to Shayna, stop pushing this. I'm not, like, this hurts me. But what was interesting was in those text messages, you actually see Shayna say something like, I'm stressed out too. I'm raising a kid. I don't know if I have a job anymore. Like, she kind of referenced, you know, like the show, right?
I'm trying to make money, right?
Right. So like we know, I mean, not that we needed this confirmation, but we know they're thinking about this, right? So here Shayna is like turning the wheels of this piece of theater for the sake of the show. And I really want to say, like, I feel vindicated in a certain way, because from the first episode of the season, everyone was saying Vanderpump Rules is back. Like, it's great again. And I felt like this lone voice. It's like, what? Like, I feel like this show has gotten so strange and performative. Again, this whole thing between Shayna and Raquel and Tom, I think I texted you, like,
what am I watching? I have a good friend who works on the show, and I texted that person. I was like, what am I watching? I was like, is this real? Because it just felt so performative. And, you know, it's funny because the person I know who worked on Vanderpump Rules, when we were texting about this, the scandal, you know, this person was saying, well, this is great because at least now everyone knows what's happening on the show. It's like really real. Like these are real relationships with real bombshells. And I was like, well, yeah, this affair is real, but it's also exposing that this whole storyline between Raquel and Schwartz was a fiction for the show. So anyways, the reason why I'm bringing this in is like Shayna was at sort of the heart of all of that, right? Sort of pushing this along. Again, sort of to whatever degree she was aware of it, dismissive of Katie's feelings. But what's so interesting is like now that this is coming out, Shayna is like 110% Team Ariana, apparently. I mean, there's back and forth now about whether this happened. Maybe she assaulted Raquel. Maybe she didn't. At the very least, when she found out, she like took Raquel's phone and threw it in the street. She's just anti-Raquel, anti-Raquel, anti-Raquel. And I see her posing in the photos with, you know, all the other women and Ariana and posting it, whatever, to her Instagram. And I'm just sort of sitting here like, what is this about for you, Shayna? You know what I mean? It's like now you're getting all this currency and leverage out of like posing as this deeply loyal friend to Ariana who's outraged on her behalf. And in your outrage is willing to completely like, yes, just completely just join in on the sort of voice that says, Raquel, you're evil subhuman scum who basically deserves to die is almost essentially what people are saying. And yet you're conveniently skipping over what you were willing to do for the sake of the show. And you're also kind of conveniently skipping over, again, how this works for you. You know what I mean? To now be Team Ariana, to be against Raquel. Like there's a currency you get out of this. So I don't quite know if this is directly responding to what you just brought in, but there's just something here, like I said up top, about how they're all orienting towards this. And again, just the presence of the show and the fact that it is being watched and that there's politics involved in terms of how the viewers are responding. And like, how much of the outrage, let's say even just from the cast, is truly about Ariana, and how much of this is about optics, the show, their rage towards Sandoval.
And what is it catalyzing for the viewers? For those of us, you and I, that are sitting here contemplating what is going on? What is your response? Where does it actually take you, because I know for me, it takes me to a place that really questions myself watching this show. And when you talk about a currency, I'm providing currency.
I know. I mean, I'm with you. This is actually more than anything has made me question, you know, why I'm watching this and what I'm watching and what I'm participating in. And also really just thinking about like Lisa Vanderpump and what she brought these kids into. And truly, like, is this good for them? I think for so long, it's so easy to think, well, you know, like, look, they've got riches, they've got wealth they wouldn't have had. They have fame they wouldn't have had. They're more successful than they ever would have been. But I really look at it now and I'm like, well, that's one lens of looking at it where you're putting currency in fame and fortune. But let's just say for the sake of argument that there isn't necessarily inherent currency in that, or there are other things that have greater currency than that. It's like, was this ultimately good for this group of people? And then especially when you truly like, and again, I want to be very clear, this isn't an endorsement of Stassi, because I know that she's problematic. But I will say, compared to how she used to be, she sounds a lot healthier being out of that world. And even Dodie, I listen to Dodie's podcast, she's clearly in a much better space, mental health-wise, than she was when she was... I mean, of course, they're now inviting her back onto the show to film. So we'll see where that goes.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I don't know. There really is this question for me of, did this show... I mean, I'm talking about it like it's in past tense. But did this show, I mean, that's a whole other question. Like, where does the show even go from here? Like, how do these people film together ever again? It's sort of interesting. It's like a ratings bonanza. In some ways, it's like gold falling from the sky for the show because it's a ratings bonanza. But I'm also like, is this the end of the show? Because where does it fucking go from here? But that aside, it's like, was this show actually good
for these people. And even thinking about someone like Sandoval, for example, actually thinking about someone like Sandoval, because, you know, one of the things I saw on Instagram, people are like posting all these scenes from the past. And so someone posted a scene of Sandoval, I think from like the second season reunion, when he was like really pissed at Jax and Kristen for like, you know, sleeping together. And, you know, he's going on a tirade about like, I would never sleep with my best friend's partner or something. And people are using that as evidence of just, oh, he's a sociopath and he was lying and he was this and that. Honestly, when I watch it, I'm kind of like, I actually still believe him in that moment. I don't know. And again, maybe this is still me just giving him way too much of the benefit of the doubt. But I kind of have this feeling like, I think there's a very good chance that back then, that was true. Like that there was a sort of compartmentalization, like maybe he fucks around in Vegas or whatever. But he's someone who wouldn't cross that line back then.
Like he used to have a line.
Yeah, and maybe I'm getting an answer to my own question about what I was turning a blind eye to, because maybe what I've been watching is a gradual, I don't know if you want to call it deterioration, or like a chipping away at something as he's stuck in this toxic world that by its very, I mean, look, the very premise of the show from the beginning was these were kind of like nobodies who were kind of going nowhere and put on this platform. And the very, what's the word, catch 22 of the show from the beginning has been the more successful they get, it's almost like the show can't live anymore because it's supposed to be about them being struggling waiters and waitresses, right? So there's this bind here where if they grow beyond Lisa Vanderpump's little world, they outgrow the show. So there's always an incentive on some level to stay small in order to keep the show going, right? So the show in some way is kind of like this living embodiment of a deeper unconscious / conscious investment in staying stuck, staying small, staying in the swamp, staying stuck in circles because you're getting fed by it. Yeah, for me coming back to this question of looking back on this, was this good for these people? And yeah, Tom Sandoval, is this someone who, I don't know how old he was when the show started. Maybe he was in his Saturn return. And did this show really kind of like, he's ultimately responsible for his own choices, of course, but did it create conditions for him to choose a path that was far darker and more sort of soul crushing than he might have otherwise been on had it not been for this show in the first place?
Follow the money. I think it's always in, you know, in these sort of capitalistic ventures, who's investing in these shows? Who are they investing in to like be the characters on these shows? How are they spinning the narrative to, like you said, in some ways infantilize a group of individuals that are becoming like hopefully moving into something? I mean, these people are getting married and having babies and moving into adulthood under the microscope and lens of a bunch of people invested in watching them. What is, like, for my investment, maybe it was, oh, who, when I think about why I watch some of these shows, I'm kind of interested in the arc of the first season through the second, third, fourth. I kind of lose interest sometimes when it gets to a point where it feels like, okay, these people are just destroying each other and themselves. I really get to that point. So when this season started and it seemed like, oh, okay, the two Toms of they're creating more of a business, getting on their feet. Sheena has a baby. Lala has a baby. But their lives are sort of, you know, still intertwined in these really weird, unnatural ways that usually friends sort of start focusing on their families more. And in real life, things naturally want to move in a direction that it feels like the show, the narrative that the show is sort of invested in is, like you said, sort of keeping bumpers around. And then if I need to keep my job, I need to supply what I'm being asked to supply. And then I lose a part of my, I disconnect from a part of myself that wants to grow beyond this. It just always brings back up the systemic nature of having power that's invested in something that isn't considering the impact that it's having on those that are a part of it.
Well, and it's interesting because it's almost like when I think about like Schwartz and Raquel, and, you know, even to a lesser degree, Katie and Shayna, in terms of this fake storyline, it's almost like they were kind of all trying to game the show. It's like, I want the goodies from the show.
obviously I don't want to kind of, for whatever reason, lay bare what's actually happening. So let me kind of fabricate something for the show. And I just sort of bring that in too, because, you know, I don't know. I just wonder, is there an energetic connection? We were talking about like Raquel and Sandoval playing a game, mm-hmm. you know, like there was a game they were playing, and it's almost like mm-hmm. the show itself starts to become a game for the cast members. And just, again, I'm thinking about Shayna in that text, like not knowing if I have a job. And actually, who was it? I think it was on Stassi's podcast, where she and her co-host were talking about when the spring rolls around and they know, like back when she was on the show, and they know a new season's going to ramp up, like you could start to feel people kind of looking for fights. It's kind of like, we got to get the show going. And so I just wonder if there's something here about gamesmanship, gaming the show, gaming the audience, playing the game.
Well, it's sort of matrixy, right? Like, you know, I think that's why I keep feeling this, like getting stuck in something. It's like, even though you think you're gaming the show, you're still in that game,
right?
Playing a game within a game within a game. You know, it's like, have you ever seen that Inception where they steal dreams?
Right.
It feels like that to me. It has that feel to it, where somebody's figured out something and then they're trying to use what they figured out to get out of something, but they're actually creating more discord,
right,
in reality.
Which is why, I mean, like now this season's interesting to me, because from that lens of like, okay, now I'm going to watch, as everyone else is, every episode through the lens of there's a game being played here. That's the real story. And so I think that's interesting. I mean, I actually think it's interesting, the truth came out, and the game, they didn't win the game. No one's winning the game. Like, the players have been exposed, and it's sort of like, we're now going to watch the game with knowledge of the game. So that's kind of interesting to me, and it's an interesting wrinkle, and I wonder how it's going to sort of impact mm-hmm. all of this.
Yeah, I was just thinking, for me, it's like, that's where I want to pull out and go, you don't have me. You know, like, I'm looking to life. Like, there are fucking games that are actually happening that are real. In the same vein that this feels like the sandbox right now. Mm-hmm. And it makes me want to pull out of it and go, all right, I'm being, you know, somehow dumbed down to try to figure out something that has no fucking, I don't know how to describe it, like real meaning for me. And why do I keep turning to this? Maybe it's more manageable or something, like, you know, because it's real, but it's not real. Like, where would my focus actually want to go if I wasn't in the sandbox?
It's interesting because, I mean, you know, what I've always said about my relationship to reality TV is part of what I love about it is that I do like finding the currents of truth in it. And that even, you know, in the past, what I felt like is even when things are maybe constructed or people are trying to game the show, it's like the truth can never fully hide. And I always had a pleasure and a passion in ferreting it out. And again, like I said, I mean, this season of Vanderpump Rules, those first few episodes, that was kind of the first time where I was like, it just felt so off and weird to me. And so for me, I was just like, what is this? What am I watching? Why am I watching it? And so it's weird. I'm having the opposite reaction of you, where it's like this revelation is kind of the thing that's pulling me back in, because, okay, we found it. We found some sort of thread of deeper truth. And now that I understand what's going on, I mean, I'm also looking at it as a piece of art. And maybe there's a difference between you and me in the sense of like, I mean, I actually don't really know what your relationship to movies is, but, you know, I'm a film buff. Like, I love movies. I love storytelling. I love the camera. I love visual storytelling. I love characters. I love drama. I love stories. So for me, like, yeah, I can get behind this as, like, once I know what this is, that this is kind of like a meta season about the game being exposed and watching people trying to play the game, but to your point, like just feeding themselves back into the game. That to me is kind of exciting and interesting. Although, as I say that, I mean, yeah, there's also a follow-up question of like, how interesting is it? That's the meaning I'm bringing to it as a thoughtful, intelligent viewer.
Yes.
If it's not being held that way by Bravo or by the executive producers or the cast, is it sort of limited in terms of the return on my investment? But at least there's something truthful there.
Yeah. To what end, as a consumer of art in this context, like, as you say, you get pulled back in to participate from this sort of more conscious of the game. What is it that you are invested in discovering or observing or participating in?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm suddenly getting uncomfortable because I think this conversation is making me ask some serious questions. Because when I do think about the collective response to this, and that's like a question I do want to bring in on a deeper level, and including the way the cast is responding to this, I mean, especially Lala, like her reaction. I mean, I notice I have deep judgment of Lala's reaction. I mean, and there is a real question coming in for me about like we've been saying, what am I participating in and why? And I can feel myself not wanting to register that question totally. It's much in the same way that I think I didn't want to take in certain parts of Tom. Like, I feel myself not wanting to take in that question all the way because I don't want to know the possibility. I mean, and I guess in some ways, this is where I connect with the cast members. There's some part of me that doesn't want to know the possibility of an answer that says, I don't want to participate in this anymore. And I want to walk away from it. And I want to choose some sort of energetic space.
What would motivate you to do that? I'm so interested.
And I also want to say, and again, maybe this is like another point of connection with the cast. I now have reason to watch these shows because it's connected to my work.
Uh-huh.
And I notice that there's like a default thing. Well, I got to watch them. This is my work. I create content around this. I have a podcast, which of course, as I say that, of course, I don't have to orient around all these shows. So what was your question again?
My question was, what motivates you to turn away and get bigger?
Like what would motivate me?
Yeah. Like what would be the signal or the impetus for an impulse to say, I'm out?
Okay. I'll answer your question, but I want to say your question's actually also prompting kind of like the other voice. And I'm glad it is because this feels really real. There is a part of me that loves pop culture. And there's a part of me that, like I said, I mean, I've talked about this before, that feels like, look, reality TV, like anything in the public consciousness is in some form a reflection of the collective consciousness. And I do love that.
Yes.
And I love taking these quote unquote trashy shows that are maybe just games on the surface and really feeling into them to see like what is here on a deeper level. So I just want to say, this is actually helping me reconnect to that. Although there might be a deeper question than that about like, so obviously, yeah, I create content that uses these shows as a window into deeper facets of humanity. And I know it is successful in helping a lot of people. And I love that. And maybe there's a question of like refinement here about like, well, okay, if I'm saying this is how I want to engage with these shows, is there a way that I can really engage with these shows in that way? Where maybe the way that I engage with them and the energy I put towards them is really directed and in an intentional way. And I mean, because certainly with all the like fanfare around this, I have really been thinking about like muting every single Bravo related account and just not having it show up on my Instagram anymore. And then if I want to go seek it out, I can go find it. But like, you know, how am I engaging with this? Does it align with where my passion actually lies with all of this? Because I do. I love the marriage of the sacred and the profane. I always have. I can feel passion is refining the deeper truth and the wisdom and the spirituality in something like Vanderpump Rules. It's why I always smile when I talk about what I do. Like I drop into the housewives and use it to talk about psycho-spiritual stuff. Like I do love that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to name that. So let me circle back around your question. Does this impact the question you just asked or would you like me to still answer it?
Sort of impacts it. I think it helps me feel what you're deeply connected with. And also, I guess it helps me feel what might be getting left out in terms of, I mean, we usually sort of bring these things in, but I take it back out fully to the, not just the pop culture, but the way pop culture is being held. And in what way is it being held? In which way is it being sort of divvied out and expressed, whether it's through art or movies or trash TV, or I want to feel where it's coming from. And I want to feel the meta in that. I want a relationship with the as far out as I can go. Like, what is this saying about me? What is this saying about those that are having these sort of big reactions? What is it saying about the people that are participating in terms of putting themselves out there this way? what does it say about those that are using those people to make money and play something out? And then what is their role in destroying these people's lives in some cases? You know, they're all self-responsible, obviously, but like kind of feels like a little bit of a hamster wheel.
Yeah, that does lead me to the question that I'd like to bring in. I mean, I do want to really explicitly just bring in the collective response to this. And as I said, there's just such like a push in the audience response. You know, I think I mentioned, like, I literally saw someone call Tom and Raquel subhuman, you know, and to your point, yeah, infidelity happens a lot. I understand there is an aspect of this that is particularly kind of sadistic, as we talked about up top. But still, I mean, it's like, at the end of the day, this doesn't impact most of our personal lives. Most of us do not know these people personally. You know, it's, these are essentially characters on a TV show. And I am just curious about what it is catalyzing in people in this culture of dismissing Tom and Raquel's subhuman, and a culture that really, like, the way that I experience it is, for example, demanding that Tom issue an apology to Ariana. Tom issues the apology to Ariana, and it's just like a feeding frenzy of talking about why and how it's horrible. And the fact is, we all know this is true. There was nothing he was going to say that anyone was going to be okay with. So it's almost like, why are you even demanding an apology from him in the first place? You know, there's nothing he's going to say that's going to in any way appease you. You know it's going to be performative. You know it's going to be for the sake of the public. I mean, for me, I'm kind of like, what's even the point of issuing a public apology to Ariana? Like, this is between him and Ariana. Any apology should be to her personally.
Privately.
But for me, it's that notion of, we want you to speak just so we can tear apart everything that you say. Mm-hmm. We're not going to listen to a single thing that you have to say. We just want to tear it apart. And I'll bring in Lala, for example. I mean, where she's going with this is just, it's so unhinged. And I guess at the center of all of this, the way that Ariana found out about this is, you know, there was a video that she found in Tom's phone, I guess, of the two of them masturbating together on FaceTime. And I guess, I don't know if this was actually a threat that was made or if it was just a fear on Raquel's part, but basically she had her lawyer emailed all the cast members basically saying, like, you can't circulate this video. Like, there's laws against this and you better not. And Lala went on her Instagram and just went on this tirade about this email that she received. And I just, like,
what was the tirade?
Well, she was just pissed that, like, the email was sent to her personal email inbox rather than to her lawyer. But, like, the viciousness. She was just kind of screaming at Raquel into the camera. And the thing of it is, it's like basically she was, to my mind, sort of minimizing the content of what was being expressed and being dismissive of it. And I'm kind of sitting here like, if this is true, if there was some threat to circulate this video, that is really serious. And no one deserves that. Yeah, I guess I just get curious about, you know, Anne Bradney, who's been on the podcast with us, you know, she has her philosophy that judgments protect us from feeling deeper feelings. That when we're in judgment, if we drop the judgment, there would be actually something there for us to feel on a deeper level. And so I just kind of keep thinking about, like, if people weren't in such self-righteous, angry, vindictive judgment of Tom and Raquel in this scenario, like, what would they be feeling? Or how would they even be responding to this? Like, if this weren't about, let's call them subhuman. And I mean, that's what's so interesting to me, is I feel like the collective is mirroring what we so often see on Vanderpump Rules. I feel like so many seasons of Vanderpump Rules, the cast will kind of pick one or two people to be on the outside, and they'll kind of ostracize them. And it will be that flavor of, like, nothing you say or do, you could say the sky is blue and we're going to tear you down. There's always someone on the outside. And I almost feel like that's sort of what's happening in the collective now. I mean, maybe this is complicating things. I think it's really fascinating that Tom and Ariana, I think, people can correct me if I'm wrong, my experience has been they pretty consistently are actually the only ones on the cast who tend not to participate in that and tend to kind of, like, align with the underdog. That's one of the things I've liked about Tom over the years. I've never seen him. He gets shitty in his own way, like one-on-one conflicts. I've never really seen him participate in a gang up. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me that now, like, the biggest kind of like Lord of the Flies off with their heads is being directed towards him. But yeah, that's often a cycle that's sort of like a pattern on the show. And now it's happening amongst the viewing audience. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. I just get curious about, like, where would we be as a collective viewing audience if we weren't in just such vindictive rage and pleasure in taking these people down and tearing them apart and nitpicking every single fucking thing they do?
Well, for me, as I said earlier, it would take me to a place of questioning my values, where I'm spending my energy and time, what I'm investing in. If I'm investing in these characters and they're disappointing me in some way, and I need to then make them bad or destroy them in some way so that I don't have to feel something about what I'm participating in by watching. Now, I think there's something disowned in people's maybe cruelty, their own humanity, the way that they're participating as humans in this cultural phenomenon of reality TV.
Do you almost feel like the little kind of like, not crisis of identity, but the little crisis I had in terms of my own relationship to reality TV was on some level, I mean, yes, that was personal to me. Do you feel like I was also on some level like unwittingly channeling like an inner conflict that's out there in the collective? Like, if we don't assign this blame towards Tom and Raquel, yeah, I mean, let me just sit with that as an energy for a moment. Like, if I'm kind of in the view, like the collective viewing audience, and I don't assign this blame to Tom and, well, okay, I want to say before I even finish the question, I mean, part of what came up was the powerlessness. Something about if I drop the judgment and I just take in like what Tom and Raquel did, I feel disappointment, like in them. I feel especially disappointment in Tom. And I feel duped. I feel deceived. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's like there actually is kind of space here to contemplate what I'm in relationship with. Like I'm really taking in Ariana's heartbreak. As opposed to, I feel like I see people saying they're taking in Ariana's heartbreak, but it doesn't feel that way to me at all. It feels like her heartbreak is being used as a vehicle for this righteous rage to move. But if I really let myself take in Ariana's heartbreak, if I let myself take in the devastation and destruction of this, if I let myself take in, I'll even bring in what I said before, because, you know, I know I'm not the only person who had a soft spot for Sandoval. And it's like, let me take in that I've perhaps watched someone go from someone who perhaps had a lot more direct connection to his humanity to someone who's perhaps disowned a lot of that humanity. And I've been on this sort of 10-year trajectory with him. Maybe there is something here about, yeah, having to question what I'm participating in, what this is, the price that real people are paying. What price am I paying?
And I'm super interested in the righteous rage that this elicits. Where does it live in your life without this?
Right.
As a culture, you know, like, I'm not speaking to you, Jamie, but
no, I know.
To this culture where there is so much righteous rage and it's being displaced in some way, being given permission to move through this vehicle. If we remove the vehicle, what is it actually in response to?
Well, that's where I come back to that initial sense of powerlessness. And it's interesting because we talked earlier about, in terms of Tom and maybe Raquel, like the game,
right,
and the cruelty being a buffer to whatever powerlessness they don't want to feel inside themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because suddenly I was just making that connection of like, oh, it's almost like this kind of cruel rage going towards them. You know, I was kind of feeling the possibility of like, is there sort of an energetic, like the pleasure that's here of taking them down? Is there an energetic connection here of the pleasure they were feeling in acting out this game underneath Ariana's nose? And like I said, if they were sort of perhaps buffering against a deeper sense of powerlessness. Is that also at play here too? Like if I don't go towards that vindictive rage towards them.
What comes to me here is just the word or the energy of manipulation, like on a grand scale. The way we manipulate ourselves, the way we manipulate others, the way we allow ourselves to be manipulated. When you use that word powerless, you know, like there's something relational between manipulation and powerlessness. And when we become conscious of a manipulating energy, or one that we can identify as I am allowing myself to see something here, there's something that gives us choice. We can choose to stay in the game by playing a game within the game, or we can step outside the game and create something else. And I think that's kind of what Anne brought in around, that judgments are often coming from a place where we're not allowing ourselves to feel something. I also think they help us connect with our values, because usually judgments come from a place where there's difference in values, or a difference in connection or expression of the way values play out. So if I looked at the collective here, and if I could feel a value around having this type of show be in the collective to express something, what is the value that it's bringing to our culture? What is it asking?
Right.
What is it helping us connect with? And where does it, what are we seeing it, where it's taking people, like going in for the kill?
Yeah. And maybe this whole scandal is really kind of shining a light on, like, yeah, just that question, like, what is this? What is this? What are we participating in? What is the price people are paying? Where is our energy going? What purpose does this serve?
And where would my energy be going if I wasn't invested in this way? If I decide I want to step outside of the game, where do I want to bring this instead? Is there something limiting about this? Because that's the way I keep feeling it. Like this whole time we've been talking, you know, I go in and out of like connection, like feeling completely disconnected. And then also back into, oh yeah, now I remember what we're doing, what we're talking about. And then also feeling the moments where I felt like I'm trapped in something that I can't get out of. Oh, wait, no, I have some agent. I don't have to stay in this sort of micro look at something. I can pull out into the meta.
Yeah. And it's also interesting, maybe just as kind of a final note, because the last thing I ever want to do is seem like, and I don't know if this is what it seems like, I don't want to make it seem like I'm on a high horse of my own or coming from a place of self-righteousness. So like I said, I mean, I'm aware, because we're talking about the judgments people have, you know, and I'm like aware, yeah, I've had judgment. I've had judgment of people's judgments, and I've had judgment like of Lala's indignant rage over this. And I was even thinking about that. I was like, okay, well, if I apply this to myself, because I'm talking about what would it mean for people in the collective to drop their judgments and to feel something. And so I'm just sort of sitting here thinking, okay, well, what if I drop my judgment of Lala in this instance and her rage? What would I have to feel? Yeah, I do actually. I feel fear and helplessness. Because the way that I experience her, I mean, this is how I experience her, is that she is embodying that part of humanity that truly, like I said, it's like nothing that you could do or say is going to be right. She just wants you to speak so that she can pounce on you. You know, and I'm sure this is connected to my judgment. I have personal history with this energy. This energy was a big part of my early life. It scares me. Because I experience it as really unconscious. I experience it as really dangerous. And I'm not being dramatic here. I think this is the kind of energy that allows things like the Holocaust to happen. Just that driving force of will of just, again, you could say the sky is blue and I'm going to tear you apart for it. And I think when I feel that in her, and I feel how deep her commitment is to that just kind of destructive rage that won't take anything in. It is a part of humanity that scares me.
And what part of humanity are you connected with in terms of, like, what do you value in humanity that's being threatened by that energy?
Do you mean like what would be the counteracting force?
Yeah, like if you let yourself feel this judgment that, you know, this is destructive, I might hear you saying like you value creativity and freedom or something, but I'm curious what you touch in on.
I value what's happening right now. Like I value, I'll talk about the long way around and see if there's a concise way of articulating it, but I value the willingness when you're getting triggered to take responsibility for your own trigger. I value taking responsibility for your own feelings and emotions. I value curiosity about a situation before you rush to judgment. I value holding space for humanity and the fact that we are all human and we're kind of in this human game together and we're all trying to kind of figure it out and we all reflect something of one another. And I've talked about this before. It is not to say Tom and Raquel get a pass for what they've done. That's why I said up top, no, what they did was there's something sick and demented and twisted about it. And my hope for them is that they can really look inside to take responsibility for what they did and why they did and to feel that remorse. But at the same time, I value understanding the choices they made came from somewhere in their humanity. Mm-hmm. And it came from somewhere in their vulnerability. And when we're willing to, I don't know what I'm moving towards with this, but it's like,
can I say something and see if it fits?
Yeah.
Self-responsibility?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lala's rage over the situation has nothing, I mean, I would say very little to do with the situation. You know, that's her rage. And I also think the edge for me, again, connected to all this, is can I find my willingness to hold space for her in that place of her blind rage? And what would that mean for me and where would that take me, you know, to really just hold, like, again, rather than being in my fear and in my judgment, mm-hmm. to just take in, okay, my experience of Lala is she's in a driving, disowned rage. Mm-hmm. And yeah, is there a way that I can hold that from a place of non-judgment? And then where would that take me?
It makes me sad. It makes me very sad. Because you know what it is? So if I like don't go into the disempowered route of like feeling threatened by it and I just sort of hold it as an empowered adult, I feel very disconnected from her. And I feel suddenly like my love of human beings. And it's like, I hear this voice in me. It's like, I want to connect with you. I want to be with you here. I want to work something out with you. But when you're in this, I can't connect with you. And I just feel my disappointment. And I feel my disappointment of an opportunity lost.
Mm.
Like for everyone, because it's like, Lala, you have an opportunity here to look at what's coming up inside you and to do work with it. As Jamie, that thrills me. Let me meet you there. But then also the culture that's getting organized around Tom and Raquel, I mean, who knows what they're going to go and do, but it doesn't set them up to go and do their work because there's an invitation here for them to do what I just said, which is, holy shit, let me look at what the fuck I just did. But we live in this culture of like blame and rage. And then it just becomes about like managing the PR and the optic. You know, it's like there's not room or space for people to welcome in the potential healing power of these dramas and these scandals, which could take us all of us, somewhere deeper inside of ourselves. And I just think it pains me. The missed opportunity pains me. The lack of connection pains me. Seeing the cycle just circle around and around pains me. You know, that's the last thing I'll say. It's like, that is true for me. I am someone, even people I do not like on a personality level, I can feel my love for them. They're part of me loves Lala. I can't stand the woman and part of me loves her. And I do. I mean, it's probably why I do this work. It's like part of me, I do have a passion for going into this, into the fray with people. And I think it really makes me feel disconnected and sad.
Mm-hmm.
So there's my little journey that I just went on and surrendering my judgment.
Mm, feels good to be with you here because I hear you standing for a more holistic world, one that receives everybody. And what I might say to that is there's something that I identify as trauma behaviors, trauma responses that are so deeply disconnecting and so feeling so threatened at circumstances that are actually not the current threat, but deeply life and death held threats. So when I feel Lala here, I feel some acting out, you know, from a place that has not healed completely,
mm-hmm.
and needs to scapegoat or separate. Like, I can't deal with this. I can't feel this. I'm hanging on.
Yeah.
Trying to get somewhere. And this is taking me down. I can't do it.
And, you know, I mean, just to kind of wrap this up, I mean, not that this is all about Lala, but, you know, my sense of her has always just been so much terror. Like, I've just always felt like underneath all that bluster, like, that's why there's all that bluster. I just feel so much terror inside of her, almost kind of like when I feel into it, I'd guess or hypothesize something about like being a latchkey kid, like a baby that was like left alone. Like, it just feels like something so like scared inside of her that she's just like, I can't even let myself know how scared I am. Because if I do, it's like then the threat's going to materialize.
Yeah.
And then I think the last thing I'll say is I think, you know, part of her rage too in this situation is I think both Tom and Raquel triggered her deeply. I think they both represented something very deep to her. And now that this is out, it's just like, yeah, kind of to your point, rather than having to deal with what Tom and Raquel bring up in her, she just gets to pretend like I was right. I mean, she's literally saying that. She's like, oh, everyone called me a bully because of the way I treated Raquel. I mean, she's literally saying this. She's saying, actually, it was me picking up on the kind of person she really is, and I was triggered. And it's just like, so basically you're saying that you were a complete asshole to her because you could sense what was in her that she actually wasn't acting out on, and you like punished her for it. It just makes no sense. You know what I mean? But all right, Piper, any last final thought just to feel complete?
Yeah, just I'm gonna take a look at myself here and ask in a real way, what am I doing exploring humanity through this sort of manufactured lens that inside of it holds some reality? And what business do I have doing that with these people that make themselves public? How am I participating in something that doesn't align completely with my values? So that's what I'm going to walk away from this shared time together with, and I'll get back to you.
All right. Well, I hope this was interesting for people. I kind of have like a feeling afterward of like, oh, this was great. I'm like, I hope this was interesting for you guys. I guess you'll let me know. Otherwise, as always, follow me on Instagram, Jamie Stein, JAMIESTEIN. There is exclusive content there that you won't find on the podcast. I am sort of slowly peeking my head out on TikTok, Housewives Empath. And if you're interested in my work, head over to my website, hollywoodreadings.com, and send me an email. All right, you guys, I will leave you perhaps with an invitation to think about your own engagement with these shows and what they mean to you and why and how you want to engage with them. And with that, I will see you on the flip side. Bye.